English Listening Comprehension Test, Autumn 2013, Advanced Level. This test is in five parts. Part 5 has separate directions. In Parts 1, 2, 3, and 4, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear Part 1 twice. First, listen to it straight through.
Good morning to all my listeners. This is Mary Wester, and I'm pleased to be here this morning to talk about the simple fact that investing in women pays dividends. To discuss this topic, I have Kim Schultz here in the studio with me. Kim, what's going on in business right now?
Thank you, Mary. It's a pleasure to be here. There's now a corporate revolution at hand. It's moving beyond philanthropy and handouts for women. Actually, it's making women partners in business at all possible levels.
Yes, that's right. And just last month, some of the most powerful companies in the United States signed on to a worldwide campaign aimed at bringing women into the economic mainstream. And the Third Billion campaign is being launched by a broad international alliance. It aims at enabling 1 billion women to become members of the global economy by 2025.
And consumer product businesses have quickly understood the benefits. For example, they no longer focus on retail stores, but bypass that, hiring women to build person-to-person distribution channels for everything from cosmetics to beverages. Avon Cosmetics, for example, gives more than 6 million women in more than 100 countries the opportunity to start their own businesses. These entrepreneurs serve as Avon's main sales force.
In addition, the benefits of women in upper management have also been shown. A recent survey found a strong correlation between gender diversity in the leadership of a business and that business's economic performance. This is truly heartening.
I quite agree with you, Mary, and may I add, to go back for a moment, that more recently companies have found the system of person-to-person distribution especially effective. This is when the purchaser needs to be educated on the product being sold. And that product can be a mobile sonogram machine, an energy lantern, or a cook stove. This makes all the difference in whether the product is used successfully or not.
Thanks for coming here today to discuss these issues, Kim.
And thank you.
Now listen to the same discussion in three sections. Look at questions 1 and 2.
Good morning to all my listeners. This is Mary Wester, and I'm pleased to be here this morning to talk about the simple fact that investing in women pays dividends. To discuss this topic, I have Kim Schultz here in the studio with me. Kim, what's going on in business right now?
Thank you, Mary. It's a pleasure to be here. There's now a corporate revolution at hand. It's moving beyond philanthropy and handouts for women. Actually, it's making women partners in business at all possible levels.
Yes, that's right. And just last month, some of the most powerful companies in the United States signed on to a worldwide campaign aimed at bringing women into the economic mainstream. And the Third Billion campaign is being launched by a broad international alliance. It aims at enabling 1 billion women to become members of the global economy by 2025.
Answer questions 1 and 2, then look at questions 3 and 4.
And consumer product businesses have quickly understood the benefits. For example, they no longer focus on retail stores, but bypass that, hiring women to build person-to-person distribution channels for everything from cosmetics to beverages. Avon Cosmetics, for example, gives more than 6 million women in more than 100 countries the opportunity to start their own businesses. These entrepreneurs serve as Avon's main sales force.
In addition, the benefits of women in upper management have also been shown. A recent survey found a strong correlation between gender diversity in the leadership of a business and that business's economic performance. This is truly heartening.
Answer questions 3 and 4, then look at question 5.
I quite agree with you, Mary, and may I add, to go back for a moment, that more recently companies have found the system of person-to-person distribution especially effective. This is when the purchaser needs to be educated on the product being sold. And that product can be a mobile sonogram machine, an energy lantern, or a cook stove. This makes all the difference in whether the product is used successfully or not.
Thanks for coming here today to discuss these issues, Kim.
And thank you.
Answer question 5. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
Good morning, and welcome to a talk about cuckoos. Cuckoo birds, that is, and especially how they migrate from England to Africa and back. We have Pauline Stancliffe here to speak to us. She is the press officer of the British Trust for Birds. Dr. Stancliffe, welcome.
Thank you. I know there have been a lot of questions in the media and on the net about my colleague's project. The basic fact is that between 1995 and 2010, the population of cuckoos spending summer here fell by almost half. So, the project was carried out to discover why this has happened, why fewer of the birds return to Britain. You know, people are really missing the call of the cuckoo. Our project started when 5 male birds were caught in Norfolk last May, and they were fitted with 5-gram tags before being released. The tag goes on the bird like a little backpack. Our scientists then monitored the birds' travels for over 12 months as they flew to Africa in the autumn and returned in the spring. This round trip is over 16,000 kilometres, and the tag has an accuracy to within half a kilometre, so we gained remarkable knowledge about the path taken by the bird over these tremendous distances. These tiny tags operate via the Argos satellite system. The tag has a solar panel that allows a small battery to constantly recharge. Hopefully, we'll receive several years of data. So, these tags enable us to obtain unbiased information about what happens to each bird tagged. And, of course, the tags do not harm the birds in any way. When we're talking about British cuckoos, we should remember that they are African birds, really. Well, the first surprise we had was the early departure of our 5 birds. 2 of them first flew to Spain, and then down the western edge of the Sahara Desert into Senegal and the Gambia. In doing so, they became the first ever British cuckoos to be recorded in West Africa. Our cuckoos that had been caught there as part of ringing projects had all been thought to be of the smaller Spanish race. The other 3 of our cuckoos headed for Italy and spent almost a month around the River Po. This confirmed this river valley as a very important fattening site for them. Having spent around a month feeding up in this area, the three very quickly moved south. They were then able to undertake not only the crossing of the Mediterranean Sea, but also the crossing of the Sahara Desert at its widest point. All five birds had reached the Congo rainforest by the end of November. Now note, it's only on spring migration that we started to lose birds. When these birds move into West Africa, they fatten up to fuel their Saharan crossing. That's where we lost our first bird on the return journey, so we think the critical time is just before they cross the Sahara. The routes the birds took into Europe provided another twist. The birds took different routes back, and these were not in line with the strategy they picked for their southward migration. Actually, only one returned through northern Italy, retracing his steps from the autumn. Another moved into southern Spain before hitting very bad weather that ended his journey. Well, we're hoping he's not dead. The wildest flight back bypassed southern Europe completely and appeared to head back to Britain over the Mediterranean Sea and France in one long flight direct from North Africa. Two of the cuckoos took just under 8 weeks to complete the journey from their wintering locations to England. Most of this time was taken up by stopovers in West Africa, North Africa, or southern Europe. Between these, they moved rapidly across the Sahara Desert and mainland Europe in fast and apparently non-stop flights. This summer, we plan to continue the project by fitting a group of female cuckoos with the same tracking devices. Males and females may well do different things in terms of migration. Males may be more time-stressed to get back in spring, to get a good territory and find females. And females might have to stay here later to get the last few eggs out. As we have seen in these five cuckoos, timing is really important, and this may be crucial in determining whether a bird undertakes a migration successfully or not. Hopefully, we can give this bird a future.
Now listen to the same talk in five sections. Look at questions 6 and 7.
Good morning, and welcome to a talk about cuckoos. Cuckoo birds, that is, and especially how they migrate from England to Africa and back. We have Pauline Stancliffe here to speak to us. She is the press officer of the British Trust for Birds. Dr. Stancliffe, welcome.
Thank you. I know there have been a lot of questions in the media and on the net about my colleague's project. The basic fact is that between 1995 and 2010, the population of cuckoos spending summer here fell by almost half. So, the project was carried out to discover why this has happened, why fewer of the birds return to Britain. You know, people are really missing the call of the cuckoo.
Answer questions 6 and 7, then look at questions 8 and 9.
Our project started when five male birds were caught in Norfolk last May, and they were fitted with 5-gram tags before being released. The tag goes on the bird like a little backpack. Our scientists then monitored the birds' travels for over 12 months as they flew to Africa in the autumn and returned in the spring. This round trip is over 16,000 kilometres. And the tag has an accuracy to within half a kilometre. So we gained remarkable knowledge about the path taken by the bird over these tremendous distances. These tiny tags operate via the Argos satellite system. The tag has a solar panel that allows a small battery to constantly recharge. Hopefully, we'll receive several years of data. So, these tags enable us to obtain unbiased information about what happens to each bird tagged. And, of course, the tags do not harm the birds in any way.
Answer questions 8 and 9. Look at questions 10 and 11.
When we're talking about British cuckoos, we should remember that they are African birds, really. Well, the first surprise we had was the early departure of our five birds. Two of them first flew to Spain, and then down the western edge of the Sahara Desert into Senegal and the Gambia. In doing so, they became the first ever British cuckoos to be recorded in West Africa. Our cuckoos that had been caught there as part of ringing projects had all been thought to be of the smaller Spanish race. The other three of our cuckoos headed for Italy and spent almost a month around the River Po. This confirmed this river valley as a very important fattening site for them. Having spent around a month feeding up in this area, the three very quickly moved south. They were then able to undertake not only the crossing of the Mediterranean Sea, but also the crossing of the Sahara Desert at its widest point. All five birds had reached the Congo rainforest by the end of November.
Answer questions 10 and 11, then look at questions 12 and 13.
Now note, it's only on spring migration that we started to lose birds. When these birds move into West Africa, they fatten up to fuel their Saharan crossing. That's where we lost our first bird on the return journey, so we think the critical time is just before they cross the Sahara. The routes the birds took into Europe provided another twist. The birds took different routes back. And these were not in line with the strategy they picked for their southward migration. Actually, only one returned through northern Italy, retracing his steps from the autumn. Another moved into southern Spain before hitting very bad weather that ended his journey. Well, we're hoping he's not dead. The wildest flight back bypassed southern Europe completely and appeared to head back to Britain over the Mediterranean Sea and France in one long flight direct from North Africa.
Answer questions 12 and 13. Look at questions 14 and 15.
Two of the cuckoos took just under 8 weeks to complete the journey from their wintering locations to England. Most of this time was taken up by stopovers in West Africa, North Africa, or Southern Europe. Between these, they moved rapidly across the Sahara Desert and mainland Europe in fast and apparently non-stop flights. This summer, we plan to continue the project by fitting a group of female cuckoos with the same tracking devices. Males and females may well do different things in terms of migration. Males may be more time-stressed to get back in spring, to get a good territory and find females. And females might have to stay here later to get the last few eggs out. As we have seen in these five cuckoos, timing is really important, and this may be crucial in determining whether a bird undertakes a migration successfully or not. Hopefully, we can give this bird a future.
Answer questions 14 and 15. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear five short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 16.
Have you heard about the most dangerous fridge magnet in the world?
Yes, I have. You just touch it, and it will order your favorite pizza.
Yeah, that's wild. I'm taking my old magnets off the fridge door, the ones holding those stupid shopping lists. I'm going to buy one of those dudes.
Me too, and it's so easy. You simply set up your favorite pizza order online once, and it can then be beamed to the restaurant whenever you activate the magnet. All you have to do is press the magnet. It's Bluetooth, you know.
And then you get an SMS confirmation, and the restaurant starts preparing your meal. In a few minutes, your doorbell rings.
This is a great invention.
Answer question 16, then look at question 17.
Have you heard that county councils are reviving the medieval tradition of lengthsmen?
Excuse me, the what tradition of what?
Medieval tradition of lengthsmen. In medieval times, the lengthsmen would walk the length of the parish to ensure ditches and drains were clear.
And what are these lengthsmen going to do now? Sounds rather old-fashioned.
Well, it's hoped the practice will help cash-strapped local authorities by spotting highway problems early, before they become too expensive to fix. The lengthsman will check ditches and report potholes. The lengthsman is someone with very specific local knowledge. If minor problems can be nipped in the bud before they become significant, that'll be quite a savings.
Sounds crazy enough to work.
Answer question 17. Look at question 18.
Can you imagine? There's a small Norwegian island dotted with pine trees, rocky coasts, rustic farms, and private wooden cottages. It sounds almost like the perfect romantic getaway. But the residents are actually inmates confined to what some are calling the world's nicest prison.
I know. I looked at the link George sent us on Facebook. It's a holiday camp for criminals. They even have the keys to their own rooms.
But even though it's so nice, the inmates don't want to come back. Only about 16% do. and that's compared to 43% here in the States.
Those numbers don't sound real.
But they are. The place really works.
Answer question 18, then look at question 19.
Have you heard that Kraft is buying out Cadbury?
Are you quite sure?
Yes, it was in the Financial Times. Kraft, which, as you know, is some wild and woolly American plastic cheese company, it has bought our beloved Cadbury, makers of the famous chocolates and candies. It's just horrible.
Can't anything be done about it?
Well, no. It's already been sold. It was a public company. But the great-granddaughter of the confectioner's founder is going to start a rival company. To finance it, she's sold off the family home. The money from that deal has allowed her to start her own company. She says she's not going high-end, but is going to make an affordable chocolate, a quirky chocolate.
Well, that's what they've been famous for.
Answer question 19. Look at question 20.
There's a new study out about hospital rooms.
What does it say? That they're even dirtier than we thought?
Nope. Noisier. Sometimes almost as loud as chainsaws.
I believe it. I visited my Aunt Sally last week and had to shout to be heard.
Yeah, a study of hospitals found 50 decibels. That's shouting level. And sometimes 80 decibels. That's the chainsaw level.
That's just terrible.
You see, much of the extra noise was due to talking between doctors and nurses, but the loudest interruptions were likely from alarms and loudspeakers.
And there's probably not much that can be done about it.
Answer question 20. This is the fourth part of the test. In this part, you will hear five short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 21.
Have you heard that Harry is looking for a new job?
No, I haven't.
Yes, he says he wants a more challenging job. He's tired of working in the bookstore.
Well, that's rather odd. My buddy Pat at the bookstore says that Harry's not doing very well there. They're about to let him go.
And to think Harry told me he's looking for something even more challenging. What does Pat say is the problem with Harry's performance at the bookstore?
Answer question 21. Look at question 22.
Would you recommend the new course in business administration?
Yes, very much so. I know it's just an optional subject, but the teacher is really good. She knows her stuff.
You don't say. You see, the reason I'm asking is because Frank straight out told me that the teacher has a very pedantic style, that she's rather bossy, probably because she's not very familiar with the material.
Answer question 22, then look at question 23.
Among the leading footballers of our time, Wayne Rooney stands out.
Quite so. He seems to have boundless energy and enthusiasm for kicking a ball around and confusing his opponents.
But I wonder if he'll be able to stir up the sort of enthusiasm needed to go into coaching. I've heard rumours.
Oh, I have too. I mean, who knows? Maybe after a time. It would be quite a move, the old star-to-coach move. And like you say, difficult.
Answer question 23. Look at question 24.
Hi, Sammy. Well, I guess we're going to be working together on a big geography project on the economic geography of Asian countries.
Yes, I've heard a rumor circulating about that. No, to be honest, I'm looking forward to the project. It'll be great.
Yes, we can abandon our school routine for 2 weeks and concentrate on geography.
But we've got a rock-hard deadline ahead of us, a week from Friday.
Well, I don't see this as a huge sacrifice. It's more of an adventure. These projects can be very useful.
Answer question 24, then look at question 25.
Sherry has had her pride hurt.
I know. But she shouldn't go around wearing her heart on her sleeve. After all, Nicholas only said that he couldn't go with her to the coffee shop. He simply had something else going on. Sherry's just a bit too obvious. And to think that she lashed out like that.
I know. You would have thought she'd been injured physically or something, the way she went on about it. But I really liked how you tried to intervene. Sherry looked like she was going to tear into Nicholas, maybe even hit him. Well, why did you jump in like that?
I thought I had to, before it got out of hand.
Answer question 25. This is the fifth part of the test. There are five sections. Each section is a separate piece of news. You will hear each section once, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A, listen to this section and then answer the question.
Fishermen in Croatia are rushing to catch a large gold-coloured fish that reportedly grants a wish each time in exchange for being put back in the water. The 10-kilo fish is reported to be difficult to catch. And one man said he had caught the fish 7 times and each time he made a wish and the wishes came true. A local fishing expert reports the fish is a type of carp that is not native to the river. It was thrown away by someone when it got too big for the fountain in their garden. The Cooper River is a popular local fishing resort.
Read question B. Question B. Listen to this section and then answer the question.
A club of 11 Chinese businessmen had more than 2,800 applicants after they advertised for wives in southeast China. And all the applicants needed to be either Chinese or of Chinese descent, attractive, single, and of course virgins. Well, the 11 wealthy grooms included at least one billionaire. The men themselves didn't bother to turn up to the first screening. They used their personnel departments to weed out the best 320 to move through to the second round. In the second round, the applicants had to go through a beauty and skills contest and show off their other talents to produce a final list. The 11 rich men made their money in real estate, banking, and fashion.
Read question C. Question C. Listen to this section and then answer the question.
According to a new study, dogs are compelled to yawn if they hear their owners do the same. Researchers claim that dogs responded to an audio cue, such as a yawn, even if they didn't see the action taking place. Scientists suggested the findings showed canines had empathy to human behaviors. For their study, researchers selected 29 dogs that had lived with their owners for at least 6 months. They recorded the owners yawning before playing it back to the pets, along with recordings of the yawn of a stranger. The results found that the dogs were much more likely to yawn when they heard their owners' yawning sounds played back. Well, I guess that's gotta be better than howling. Read question D. Question D. Listen to this section and then answer the question.
Don't mess with Japanese honeybees. Their archenemy is the aggressive giant Asian wasp. When they're confronted with this wasp, the honeybees attack it by swarming around the wasp. They form what scientists call a hot defensive bee ball. With up to 500 bees all vibrating their flight muscles at once, the bee ball cooks the wasp to death. While this defensive move has been known for some time, the mechanism behind it has been a mystery. But researchers at the University of Tokyo have now studied the bees' brains. They have found that the bees' brains may actually be jointly processing and responding to the threat. The bee ball high temperature phase lasts about 20 minutes.
Read question E. Question E, listen to this section and then answer the question.
Council chiefs in Burnham-on-Sea in Somerset banned festive bunting from town centre lampposts. Traders in Burnham-on-Sea had hoped to hang hundreds of feet of decorative bunting flags up and down the high street, but the county council said every lamppost would have to be stress tested to ensure they were strong enough to hold the decorations. The shopkeepers said that they simply wanted to hang the bunting between shops and lampposts. They couldn't see what damage a bit of string and plastic could do. The council is worried about the bunting, which goes across the footway and back to the shops. The risk of it falling and harming shoppers is considerable, and that's why they banned the bunting flags.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. In addition, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.